And as we've been discussing, Security Committee of Federal Cabinet meets later today. It seems it'll almost certainly authorise those airstrikes in Syria against the Islamic State terrorist group. The government is expected to accept Washington's request to expand bombing, to cross Iraq's western border and launch bombs into Syria in IS targets. But will the Islamic State still control key territory in Iraq and Syria? And is a military approach the most effective strategy to defeating the organization? These are questions I put to retired general and former Central Intelligence Agency Director David Petraeus, who, of course, led U.S. forces in Afghanistan and Iraq. He says Islamic State can only be defeated through a dual political and military approach. General Petraeus is in Australia as a guest of the Lowy Institute for International Policy. I spoke to him earlier.
Thanks, James. It's great to be back in Australia, and it's great to be with you.
Tell me, can Islamic State be defeated?
I do believe it can, and I believe it must. In fact, it poses such a significant threat to the region, the Middle East, but also to our own countries, to those of our allies and our partners throughout the world. It will be a long, tough, hard fight, however, but it is clear that, as President Obama said, it has to be degraded and it ultimately has to be defeated.
Can it be defeated without Australia and the United States enlisting the support of the enemies of our enemies?
I believe it can. Certainly the enemies of our enemies, and you're talking about Iran most significantly, needless to say, and some of their proxy elements like Lebanese Hezbollah, Bashar al-Assad's forces, the Quds Force. Certainly there is an objective that is in common, the defeat of the Islamic State. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the enemy of our enemy is our friend. I think you should still be very, very cautious about Iran's objectives in the region and indeed beyond the region.
But if Bashar can't defeat Islamic State with his loyal Syrian army on the ground, and Al-Qaeda-linked Jabhat al-Nusra can't defeat Islamic State, and the Kurds alone can't defeat Islamic State on the ground with their fearsome Peshmerga, how can Australia and the U.S. in an airplane defeat Islamic State?
Well, we won't do it just in an airplane. We'll do it by having forces on the ground over time.
In Syria?
As are being reconstituted in Iraq, and not our forces. No, there will be forces that we support on the ground, as we are doing now in Iraq with increasing numbers of Iraqi security forces reconstituted from those that crumbled and collapsed under the weight of the offensive of the Islamic State. And then in Syria, regardless of what your objective is, but any objective has to include that of the defeat of the Islamic State and very likely the irreconcilable elements of the Al-Qaeda affiliate, Jabhat al-Nusra, that has to involve the establishment of and the expansion of a moderate opposition force that we can support with, indeed, our air assets, our intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and precision strike assets.
But isn't it the case that America and the Gulf state dictatorships are funding and arming and training elements that serve their interest, IS anti-Bashar elements, regardless of whether they are quote-unquote moderate, which is a rather meaningless term in the context?
I'm not sure it is meaningless. I think that there are certain forces that are much less extreme than the extremists, the Islamic State, and again, the hardcore Jabhat al-Nusra forces, the Al-Qaeda affiliates. And indeed, it is those forces that we all need to work together to support. Until this time, that just has not been adequate. And one reason that, in fact, some of the moderate elements in Syria have joined, for example, Jabhat al-Nusra was because they were more well-resourced, and some have even joined the Islamic State. Again, these Sunni Arabs in Syria want to fight and take down Bashar al-Assad, the leader of a minority of the country, the Alawite Shia elements of the country, which have been responsible now for the deaths of nearly 250,000 Syrians and the displacement, either internally or externally, of some third of the entire population, if not more than that. This is, of course, the source of the extraordinary number of refugees flooding into Europe.
Yes, not IS, but Bashar. 10 million refugees, overwhelmingly fleeing Bashar and the hundreds of sectarian militias, both for and against him. Yet US and Australia are focused exclusively, it seems, on destroying Islamic State.
Well, and I think over time that if we are going to succeed in developing moderate forces, that we will have to protect those moderate forces, not just against the Islamic State and Jabhat al-Nusra, but also ultimately against any other forces that try to take them on, including, frankly, those of Bashar al-Assad and his proxy supporters.
Should the West have done this a year or two ago, before Islamic State existed, whilst the Free Syrian Army, or at least the uprising in Syria, was, well, initially a civilian endeavor?
Well, there was a moment early on where there was no Jabhat al-Nusra, there was no Islamic State. This is before al-Qaeda in Iraq had reconstituted, if you will, as a result of policies in the Iraqi government that alienated the Sunni Arab population. There was no Lebanese Hezbollah on the ground, small Quds force from Iran. And there was a moment where it may have been possible, and without getting into what I might have recommended as the director of the CIA, although it's generally out there in a number of the memoirs of people who served during that time as well. Again, there was a moment where we could have supported the moderate opposition. No guarantees that it would have transformed the country, but it certainly could not have resulted in a worse situation than we see right now. I think it's accurate to describe Syria as a geopolitical Chernobyl, spewing instability, extremism, refugees, displaced persons throughout the region and indeed beyond that, now well into, obviously, into the different countries of the European Union and indeed beyond that.
Given the American and Australian invasion of Iraq was a factor, certainly in the spillover of jihadists from Syria east into Iraq, is there at least not a risk that the bombing of IS in Syria will empower Bashar?
There are risks of everything, all times, everywhere, anytime you take an action. But we've also seen that there are enormous risks from inaction. And I think arguably the inaction two and a half years ago in Syria is a major factor in where we are today in Syria with, as I termed it, this geopolitical Chernobyl that's just spewing problems throughout the region and the world.
You were the top commander in the Middle East and Central Asia. You were director of CIA, retiring in circumstances not of your choosing. What do you see as your legacy?
Well, first of all, let me just note that, you know, I was extraordinarily privileged to lead forces in two different wars, if you will, in Iraq, 4 years in Iraq, a year in Afghanistan, to command the broader Middle East, Central and parts of South Asia as the commander of U.S. Central Command, and obviously to serve as the director of the CIA. In each case, by the way, working with extraordinary Australians, and I feel a deep debt of gratitude, appreciation, and admiration for the service and the sacrifice of Australian soldiers, diplomats, intelligence professionals, many of whom I was privileged to serve with and in some cases literally to command in these different endeavors. Again, with that extraordinary privilege, I think, you know, legacy is that, you know, here's somebody that had these extraordinary opportunities, tried to discharge the responsibilities of them to the best of his ability, was very, very fortunate to be joined in these endeavors by incredibly talented, committed, selfless individuals who sacrificed a great deal. I laid a wreath the other evening at the War Memorial in Canberra after visiting the monuments, the stones that represent each of the 11 Australian soldiers killed in Afghanistan during the period that I was the commander of the International Security Assistance Force. And it really drove home, again, the cost of these wars, the cost in lives, the cost in financial commitments, the sheer determination required. And having been part of that is truly something very, very special and something for which I will always be grateful.
General David Petraeus, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure, James. Thank you.
And that's the retired general, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, David Petraeus, who led US forces in Afghanistan and Iraq.